future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from FanFest for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Who win it now?
Tucker towards right field, and that is going to be down for a hit. In the score, Yordan Alvarez, and the Astros take a 4-3 lead. Kyle Tucker drives in the go-ahead run here in the seventh.
9-1-2 hitters for the White Sox.
There's one up the middle. Neris will have an extra cushion to work with. In the score comes Yiner Diaz.
Get the ball down and keep the runner at third base.
Here this we go. Ball up the middle. That'll be a base hit. In comes Corey Jolks, and the Astros get two runs here with two outs. Again, the Cuban connection coming through. Yordan and Jose Abreu.
There you hear some of the highlights in the Astros' 6-4 win yesterday over the Chicago White Sox. Welcome into the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. We're live here from the Final Four Fan Fest at the George R. Brown Convention Center. It's me, Brian McDonald. We have a special guest today. We don't have Sean. We don't have RJ. We do have Josh behind the glass. But with me from Sports Map Radio, the Just Saying It show, 2 to 6 a.m. Monday through Friday on Sports Map Radio, Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter. Cole, how you doing?
I feel like I'm getting called up for the minors, man.
Yeah,
I get
a little
to come
bit.
On in. This is the bullpen.
It is the bullpen.
But I'm like coming in as like the middle reliever from AAA. How are you
okay.
doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. I think I want to say to start off, I used to work before we get into the Astros. We're going to get into the Astros. We're going to get into the Final Four. We're even going to get into WrestleMania. I'm going to force Cole to talk some WrestleMania with me here.
You're not forcing me. I just
okay.
I'll try to play along and just pick the prettier one. That's
yeah, exactly. That's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to pick the one with the prettier outfit. So I just want to say I used to work when I was at a different media group here in town. I used to work a shift that started at 4 a.m., so I would drive in at 2. And so at the time, a guy that used to work for this media group, he now works for the Houston Texans, John Harris,
right.
was hosting the overnight show on what I believe was SB Nation radio back then.
It was still SB Nation.
I think it was. Anyway, so I just want to say, hearing what he did, talking to him about that shift, a lot of respect for what you do coming and doing the show at 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. Monday through Friday. That's got to be a chore, but it shows your passion for the radio industry, and a lot of respect to you for that.
Caffeine and passion keeps you flowing for 4 hours. And, hey, if someone's willing to go ahead and give me a microphone to scream into for 4 hours a day and give my opinions, I call that a kind of a win for a job.
It's actually
not really like I'm working. I'm just hopefully not getting a caller to call him and say, well, I'm an idiot, which is probably going to happen 10 times out of 10.
It'll be interesting to see. I know it was for me. Like, when I stopped doing that shift, my shift was 4 a.m. to noon. When I stopped doing that shift, my sleep schedule never recovered. So I'll be interested to hear from you. Whenever you move it to a different day part, like, are you still keeping crazy hours?
So, like, I say to my fiance all the time, I'm a fireman sleeper. Because I'd be, like, 3 hours on, I'll come home, I'll do 3 hours, then I'll go to work, and I'll go to, you know, covering the Texans, because I'm also Texans local reporter around here.
Right.
Cover college football. And if I get lucky, I get, like, a 90-minute nap in the middle of the day, and I get to wake up and then take my dogs back out and do the whole thing over again.
Yeah.
So it's fun, and it's interesting. The problem is you got to be able to find the right amount of caffeine and also the right amount of levels to when you get off air, your mind's like, done. Like, you are going to fall right asleep as soon as your head hits the pillow.
Yeah, it's impressive work. So let's get into these Houston Astros. I think a lot of people after the – man, I feel like everybody I heard on the radio, just fans I read on Twitter, after that they lost 3-2 on opening day to the White Sox – it felt like the sky is falling. Suddenly people forgot that this team has gone to 6 straight ALCSs, been to 4 World Series, won 2 of them. And it felt like, you know, between, okay, you know, Lance is hurt, Michael Brantley's hurt, Jose Altuve's hurt. They lose on opening night. They can't hit Dylan Cease. The world's falling apart. All of a sudden, the Astros score 6 runs in back-to-back games, beat the White Sox both days, and everyone's feeling good again.
Well, the biggest thing is that everyone looks at the removals and they look at the subtractions rather than the additions. You don't look at adding in a Jose Abreu to play first base. You don't look at how your pitching staff has been able to improve with Framber Valdez last season really taking the role as the new number one, with Christian Javier going up from the bullpen to move into the rotation, with potentially a Hunter Brown being your guy that you're ready to lock in and load as your future of the organization. All you pay attention to is, oh, no more 39-year-old Justin Verlander. He's in the Big
Apple. Who's on the DL?
Yeah, who's on the IL, yeah. Too, so it's not like it's that big of a deal. Oh, no more Yuli Gurriel, 40-year-old guy who basically at this point should have been a platoon man rather than be a full-time starter. Oh, no worries about what we have with Chaz McCormick, Jake Myers. No Uncle Mike out there. It's like, take a breath. We have 162 games. You're going to lose a few of them. I hate to break it to you. The A's are going to win a game against the Astros this year.
They are.
Hate to say it, people. But it's about how you rebound, and it's about how you find ways to make minor adjustments. And the last 2 days, not only have you seen that at the plate, but you've also seen that for the pitchers at the start, and you've also seen it for the bullpen.
So, I mean, yeah, like you said, I mean, they're going to lose a few games. Last year, I believe the Astros had the second-best record in baseball behind the Dodgers. Had 106 wins, which means they lost 56 games.
So. Really? Only 56?
Yeah, only 56.
Crazy!
But that's going to – I mean, so we got 6 months season, 56 losses. Some of them are going to have to come from somewhere. So let's get into some of the good and the bad from what we've seen in the Astros in this opening series. First off, Yordan Alvarez and Kyle Tucker, two of the highlights we heard in that video package that Josh bumped in with. They've each homered in these first three games and drove in 9 of the Astros' 14 runs. And that stat is even, as impressive as it is even a little deceiving because one of the runs they had was on a wild pitch, so an RBI didn't go to anybody. So they've got 9 of the 13 RBI the Astros started off with. If Tucker and Alvarez are hitting at this level, does it even matter that Jose Altuve's out to June? This offense could be great.
No, because of also you're getting a good play from Jeremy Peña. So when you get to the start of the lineup, you get somebody who's able to set the tone at the very beginning of the rotation to where when you guys already have runners in scoring position, you know that your two clutch hitters who are hitting 2 and 3 will be able to either drive him in or move him forward and advance him for another batter to get up there, which is really important for you to set the dialogue at the very beginning. But yeah, you have these two guys that you're trying to be the future of your organization and the face of the organization. Make no mistake, we already know that Yordan Alvarez paid up. He's locked in underneath the pass regime. He's not going anywhere. Kyle Tucker is still looking for that multi-million dollar deal.
Yeah.
And we're talking about a top 10 outfielder, not just at the plate, but defensively in the corner.
Yeah, he won a gold glove last year.
He has a gold glove, and he makes wild throws that are just pinpoint accurate. Every single time he does that, it's getting a little bit more of a million. Add another million to the dollar
line. Oh, he's going to be so
expensive. Dana Brown at some point is going to have to sit down and go, I'm either watching this kid walk away, or I have to pay him before it's going to be ridiculously way too high.
I think it's already going to be ridiculously high. I think you're looking at, and I don't have the numbers of some of the other guys have gotten in front of me, like Trey Turner and obviously the guys in San Diego. But I think you're looking at probably a $300 million contract at this point for Kyle Tucker. And we'll get into a little bit of this later, but I think he's somebody with the new rules, not having to worry about the shift, the increased base stealing attempts now that you have the wider bases and the fewer pickoff throws. I think he's somebody that's going to have a 30-30 season with a gold glove on the defensive side. How's that not somebody that gets a $300 million contract?
Well, it's not only that. It's also the fact that because there's no more shift. I mean, they said this yesterday on the broadcast. 88% of the time last year, the Chicago White Sox played the shift against Kyle Tucker. If that shift's still in play, that very first RBI doesn't happen.
Yeah,
same thing with Yordan Alvarez. They were talking about how he was the most shift-on player last year in baseball.
Was he really?
Yeah. And then you look at that, and you just go, if he continues to drive it, it doesn't matter if it's a bloop single, it doesn't matter if it's a hard-hit grounder, because if they're not in play, that's going to take away a lot of double plays, that's going to take away a lot of opportunities for quick outs, and it's also going to up the value when it comes to stealing bases. You're going to see, I think, a lot more hit and runs, you're going to see a lot more players be able to get into scoring position faster, and I think the pitch clock does another thing, because remember, we saw that yesterday where I think it was Tucker at the plate, and... who was the starter yesterday? I'm blanking on it.
The actual starter.
For Chicago.
Oh, for Chicago, it was Giolito.
Giolito, that was right. And Giolito got clocked for the first time with this pitch sack violation. So I think that you're going to see, at least for the start, a few more rushed pitches for these guys to where that's going to lead to more RBIs, that's going to lead to more base hits, that's going to lead to more opportunities to raise up your OPS, your slugging percentage, your on-base percentage, all these little tidbits that eventually are going to be adding a couple more millions. I would not be shocked to see a Mookie Betts 12-year, $330 million deal thrown
either.
Out to Kyle Tucker.
I wouldn't either.
And he's earned it.
He deserves it. And if he goes out and gets it, I'm not one of these guys that hates on athletes for getting all the money they deserve. I mean, maybe more so in football where, you know, obviously you take more of your health in your hands every time you step out on the playing field. But there's a ticking clock on how much time you have to make this money. So go out and get every dollar you can while you can get it. And look, if the going price is something around 10 years, $300 million, you mentioned Mookie Betts, maybe 12, I think you said 340?
330,
regardless. I think the
a lot of money that we don't have.
Yeah. Look, the Astros have been printing money by being in the ALCS and the World Series almost every year. I mean, they're getting basically to the point where they're having every possible home game they can have for revenue. So revenue's not a problem. We already saw Jim Crane give out World Series rings to every single employee the Astros have. They've got money. I just think they have a philosophy in the organization that they're not going to go beyond, 6 years and whatever that average annual value would end up being. Because, Jordan Alvarez, 6-year deal. Alex Bregman, 6-year deal.
What is the deal with general managers in Houston not being able to give out lucrative contracts?
I think it comes from the top.
It's literally like every single team. All right, no Rockets, no 10-year deal. All right, well, no Texans, no 3-year deal.
Oh, the Texans signed this year was a 1-year deal seemingly.
I don't mind it, and we'll talk about that probably later on the show to why it's important. But just like, hey, in baseball, the salary cap doesn't exist. Like, we all make the jokes about it in football. It's like, oh, look at the Saints. They always just going to push it down to the ladder until next season. We'll wait till next year to go ahead and pay everyone. Well, baseball, it doesn't exist. If you want to pay, you have to pay, and that's just it. So it comes down to, do you allow a talent like this, again, such as George Springer, such as Carlos Correa, to walk out of your building? The difference is that you had Kyle Tucker in place when George Springer left. So he could become the new right fielder. He could become the new lead up in the bat. You see the same thing with Jeremy Pena, because if he now takes over, and he has had a hot start, especially leading off the games, so you feel content losing a guy like Carlos Correa. Do you feel content with who's in your farm system to replace the production, not just offensively, but defensively, of a guy like Kyle Tucker in the corner?
The answer right now, I think, is no. The Astros farm system, for what they've had to do to keep this team at the top on the major league level, isn't at the same level that it was when Tucker and those guys were coming up. But luckily, Dana Brown, who has shown a propensity to be able to get guys to the majors quick, we saw it with Strider, we saw it with Michael Harris. He's had a lot of hits with his time in the Braves. So luckily, Tucker is under team control this year, 2024, and 2025. So GM Dana Brown does have some time to kind of find that next group of stars if they are sticking with the philosophy of not paying anyone the massive contracts that it would likely take to keep a Kyle Tucker. But it is a little bit concerning because I do think there's an angle of this where it feels like their past success has kind of made them falsely believe that they can do this every year. Like, oh, well, we let Gerrit Cole, we let, Justin Verlander, we let all these guys go. Carlos Correa, George Springer, you mentioned. So we could do that forever. Eventually,
it'll catch up.
If the minor leagues aren't having a ton of hits every year in the draft, yeah, like you said, that's going to catch up with you at some point.
But here's the thing that I really appreciate about Dana Brown coming from the Atlanta Braves system. So Alex Anthopoulos, the GM there.
Credit to you for nailing the last
name.
Dude,
I had to know that back in 2019. Impressive. Well, because of when I was working for the Astros, you had to have that conversation of, like, knowing everyone there.
Sure.
So they made you write down, like, the name, pronunciation.
Oh, the pronunciation. So
Alex Anthopoulos, when he went out and spent a bucket load to go get all those outfielders, like Jorge Soler, Jock Peterson,
all that. Oh, yeah, 2019, yeah.
Well, once again, he just said, screw arbitration. Let's pay my guys now so that way I don't have to worry about this longer. And I think that that's really interesting because Michael Harris is paid up. Austin Riley's paid up. You have Dalton Grisham now on a contract.
Yep.
You have everyone paid up. Does Dana Brown take that same approach when it comes to these guys? Because if I can build a foundation and then I can use those trade chip pieces from my farm system, AAA guys on the rise, to be able to bring in a ring at the last second of the deadline.
Absolutely. We got a lot more to get to here on the Astros, only scratching the surface from their first three games against the White Sox. It's the bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Out at the Final Four Fan Fest at the George R. Brown Convention Center. It's Brian McDonald. It's Cole Thompson from Sports Map Radio. We'll be right back here on ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from FanFest. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. It's the bullpen with the producers here at ESPN. I almost said my old station here. They're the flagship that I used to work at for a period of time. No, it's the bullpen on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. It's Brian McDonald with me from Sports Map Radio, Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter. And guys, I should actually start this off with hello, friends. This is the send off for the legendary sports broadcaster Jim Nance, who will be calling his last NCAA men's Final Four matchup on Monday, April 3rd, with UConn and San Diego State taking the court at Houston's NRG Stadium. Nance, who is 63, has been the voice of the Final Four for 32 years and is closing out his career in style in the city where he attended college. A proud University of Houston alum, has indeed left an indelible mark on men's college basketball, and his voice echoes throughout the sport's storied history. It'll be weird to hear the Final Four next year without Jim Nance, won't it?
Listen, natural Houstonian, proud Houstonian, making his final send-off right in the place where he calls home.
Perfect. It's a perfect story.
Could not be a better way.
It's like
to
Jerome
end.
Bettis going off with the Super Bowl win in Detroit.
Here.
Yes, exactly.
There we go. See, that was actually my first Super Bowl that I can vividly remember every single play.
Oh, really?
I remember that, and I got to meet Jerome Bettis, and I even remember I gave him a dap up. At the very end, I was like, it was great to meet you. The bus doesn't stop here. And he started laughing. It was good.
Did you tell him that Roethlisberger was down short?
No. Not definitely going to do that.
So tell us about one of the cool things going on here at the Fan Fest, Cole.
Make sure you guys stop on by the Final Four Fan Fest presented by Capital One. And make sure if you are here, swing on by the Coca-Cola Zero Sugar footprint to take part in an interactive race where runners battle to maintain possession of the basketball while defenders on the sidelines control the obstacles in hopes of forcing a turnover. That and a plethora more right here at the
Fan Fest. Oh, there's so much going on. I saw you could play, you could shoot hoops, you could throw the football around, you could kick a soccer ball. There's food and beverage options out here. There's a ton going on.
So,
if you're a Capital One card holder, you get in for free. So, I mean, if you got one of those, then there's no reason not to come out here.
So, Jake Asman and I from the Wheelhouse came here on Thursday night for a sneak preview.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I remember Jake went out, yeah.
So we came here for a sneak preview. We did everything. That man, by the way, if anybody listens to ESPN 97.5 during the drive home,
I do.
3 p.m. to 7 p.m., make sure you call in and tell Jake he needs to go ahead and hit the treadmill a little bit more, because that man was gassed after less than 10 minutes of playing hoops. He made a couple threes.
Okay.
But by the end, he was basically gasping for air at that point.
I think I heard Jeremy Branham say that the form on his shot, Jake's shot, wasn't that pretty. How would you rate the Jake Asman jump shot form?
Better than mine.
So you don't have any room to talk.
If
huh?
I'm a negative four, then he would probably be about a negative one. Let's go with that. Listen, I made a half court shot. He can vouch for this. And I was like, I need to walk off the court. And
I was about to say, you should have pulled the George Costanza and just all right, good night, everybody.
Nope,
walk away.
Went back. I tried to make a layup, missed it immediately, off, didn't want to talk to anybody after that.
So what was your favorite event, I hear, that you did with Jake here on Thursday?
Jake and I did the home run derby over there.
Okay.
And so when we were hitting, we did bat flips. We tried to run the bases.
Nice.
They were not happy with that. We were running the bases.
They weren't happy with
the one. They're like, hey, can you not? I was like, oh, well, this is already our last swing, so bye. And then we just ran on out.
So they weren't happy with the bat flips?
Oh, they weren't. No, they were like, there's children here. It's like children need to learn that when you do something awesome, you celebrate like an awesome.
Yeah. I would be bad at that, because I took softball as a college credit.
See, when, I did soccer.
You did. See, yeah. I did when I went to community college, the first community college that I went to. one semester I had bowling as an athletic credit, and another one I had softball. But there was one day in particular that it wasn't a great sport. So it was raining outside, so the softball had to move inside to a gymnasium, and because I was just trying to be stupid. In a college athletic course softball game, I tried to bunt for a hit because everyone was playing back, and I made it. But they called me out anyway, and I went full. Who was the manager that used to flip out for the Devil Rays back in the day?
Lou
Piniella. Lou Piniella. I went full Lou Piniella, picked up the first base bag, and flung it across the gymnasium. Not all the way across the gymnasium. I didn't do a complete freak out.
You didn't want to pull Lance Berkman at HCU?
No, it was mostly for fun. But I did throw the first base bag a little bit. The coach of that class was not pleased with me. Someone we are pleased with in Houston, we talked about him a little bit last segment. Jose Abreu, the big addition for the Houston Astros during the free agency period, really the only big free agency ad. They re-signed Rafael Montero, as he's sometimes referred to on the station, Young Money Montero, with that massive contract.
Yeah, Young Money, not a lot of money going this way. Not a lot of dollar bills flying out of his pocket game one.
Yeah, he didn't have a great game one. But Jose Abreu, I think the biggest question for him has been, like, would his power come back? He only had 15 home runs last year with the White Sox, but when you looked at the ballpark factors, if he played his games here in Houston, his numbers would have gone well up into the mid-20s. So, I mean, I have Jose Abreu here listed in the good category, as he's had a hit in all three games, including two on Saturday, but no home run yet. Where are you with Jose Abreu? I mean, he's hitting fourth right now. Do you like that spot for him? And do you think the power comes back to what we've seen at prime Jose Abreu levels?
Can you move him down just until he gets his first home run? Kind of like a...
Are you someone that likes to go right, left, right? Because I think that's what they're doing now. Because you got Yordan hitting third, lefty, then Jose Abreu right at four, and then Tucker at five.
I don't mind it. I think that if you want to do back-to-back, as long as you've had another left-hander in the lineup, you can do it that way. So if you want to go left, left, right,
not
right,
only that,
left.
But when you look at the splits, Alvarez hits lefties well.
Right.
So it's not like really, I mean, the big home run in Game 6 of the World Series was off a left-handed reliever. So it's not, he's not the traditional lefty that can't hit lefty. So I don't know. In going left-left, I don't think you lose an advantage there because he hits lefties well.
I feel like that if you move him down the lineup and use it like kind of as an advantage or like a kind of like a reward to be able to hit cleanup, because if even though you are known for your power, even though you are known for your velocity and how the ball trajects out of the ballpark, I feel like you still have to earn it. You're not a part of this World Series champion roster. You're still trying to be a guy that ends up being a part of this next regime, keeping the dynasty alive and in motion. You got to be able to kind of prove that to everyone in the locker room first. Nothing should be handed to you, especially when you don't have the power in a spot where it is known for being a power hitter spot. So I'm not saying you have to move him all the way down to like seventh, but if you move him down to fifth, maybe move someone up into the lineup. Maybe you allow, maybe you move him even up to third, let someone like Kyle Tucker bat fourth, who then when you get a runner in scoring position, he automatically knows his clutch money and he's just going to be able to drive in another run. That's exactly what I think you need to be able to do.
I think you're definitely going to see, I mean, it's obviously a while before he comes back, but when you see Jose Altuve come back, I definitely think we're going to see Jose Abreu drop in this lineup because Jose Altuve is obvious, right? Because right now you're 1-5 is looking very solid. I know one of our negatives is Alex Bregman. We'll get to him
in
a moment.
He'll be fine,
but... Your 1-5 with Pena, Bregman, Alvarez, Abreu, and Tucker looks really solid. When Altuve comes back, you assume he at worst hits second, and everyone kind of gets dropped down a spot. But I think I'm with you. I think I might drop Abreu and reward Tucker, have him in the cleanup spot, not only because I think Tucker's earned it, but I think one of the things that Jose Abreu has shown that he can do, even when he's not hitting for power, is he hits for average really well. Hit over 300 last year.
Yep.
He's been a great contact hitter throughout his career. And so one of the challenges of this lineup while Altuve is out is whoever hits fifth doesn't really have the protection because you got some rookies like Yonder Diaz. You got Chaz McCormick if Dusty ever decides to play him.
They did yesterday. Let's be fair.
We'll get to that.
He did have a good game. And
yeah.
Dusty, he had a good game.
Yeah.
Dusty, he had a good game.
Wait, the lineups should be out by now. We'll have to see if, while I'm talking here, look up to see if Chaz McCormick is back in the lineup. But I think one of the challenges that you'll see while Jose Altuve is out is the kind of the drop-off in the batting order after the fifth spot and not having a lot of protections. You had, like, rookies like Yonder Diaz. You had another rookie in Corey Jolks hitting sixth. And so I think Tucker, who is not to say that he hits for a bad average, but he's someone that typically hits around 260. So I think it makes a lot of sense to where I think Jose Abreu, being a better contact hitter, can maybe survive not having the protection because he's just someone in general who makes better contact.
B-Mac?
Oh, no. Okay. I'm not looking.
Batting
I'm
sixth. It's a nice lineup. Chaz McCormick.
All
Dusty
right,
did
all right.
a good thing.
All right,
good
Dusty.
For you,
Chaz
Dusty.
McCormick. So 2 days in a row, Chaz McCormick is in the lineup. That's good to hear.
But I agree with you. That veteran presence before the younger guys to really kind of set the tone, put yourself in a good situation, does work. I also would not be surprised to say if you were to move a guy down in the lineup just to be able to have a Yiner Diaz, to be able to have a Corey Jolks, if they swing and miss, if they have no ground, if they pop out, but you have a runner in scoring position, you have that veteran bat that keeps you at the bottom of the lineup to where you can still consistently put up runs. There's not a negativity in that. Listen, if I was a batter, I'd want to bat 6th or 7th because if I feel like in that spot, you know that the pressure's not on you to deliver the biggest ball in the park, but it also gives you an opportunity to drive in runs. And if you're a contact guy, especially someone right now like Jose Abreu, who's
been a great RBI guy over his career.
And he's an RBI machine. The guy just knows how to drive in runs.
Yeah, he had like 120-something a couple years ago.
I mean, the guy basically is flying down the highway like he's driving in runs. That's what he kind of does. So when you have that guy, I think it's important for you to have him for especially a young, new up-and-comer to be able to see, hey, just because of it's an 0-1 count and I end up popping out, I didn't leave a guy stranded at second base. I have a veteran presence behind me to be able to still put us in a position to get a run, and it's not my fault that I ended up leaving the runner on base.
One more positive before we get to break here quickly. We mentioned him kind of off and on in the first two segments, but Jeremy Pena being moved up to the leadoff spot, I think it's been all positive signs so far. He's gone 4-for-11, hitting .364 over the three games, and he's got two stolen base attempts, which I think is important. Not only is he getting on base, because he was someone last year had a bit of a problem chasing the low outside sliders. You were maybe worried about how much he would get on base, and you didn't know how much he would steal. But I think with the new rules, you've already seen in three games he has two stolen base attempts. He's getting on base. Your thoughts so far with Jeremy Pena in the leadoff spot?
Jeremy Pena basically went into hibernation from October and woke up and still thought it was Halloween.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it
looked
like
October
right now.
Jeremy Pena.
Because when you have that guy, number one, anybody in the organization that still had doubts that you'd be able to replace the production of Carlos Correa. All right, that was out of the way.
Gone.
Congratulations.
Gone. I love Carlos Correa, and I was in the camp of pay Carlos Correa. I'm glad to say I was wrong.
You know what?
This was the right move.
I think everyone's okay saying that they're wrong on this one. Because if you have a young player who you'll have on roster control for the next, 6 years?
Yeah.
And you'll not have to worry about paying him, he is going to get better. I do think that you've seen him get better defensively as well. He had that highlight play with the bare hand snag in game three yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also the fact that he's able to set the tone at the start of the game really allows you to kind of manipulate the pitcher. Because the pitching staff is going to have to go, okay, if I can't get this guy out, they're already seeing
then
my
Bregman and then Alvarez comes up, and Abreu
and
Tucker.
Then Tucker. And then Jolks comes up. And then McCormick, thank God he comes up.
Yeah.
And then you get Martin Maldonado. Well, he's really good behind the plate, so we're not going to talk about anything else. But the fact that a pitching staff now has to be able to see
Maldi.
All of that. And you already know, especially if you can go like to a 3-2 count and he works in a bunch of different variety of pitches and he still gets on base, a pitcher just goes, all right, you've seen everything. Now I got to work around it.
Yeah, and not only that, but the guys coming up after him also get to see some of your
pitchers.
That's
what I mean.
Yeah,
every single guy behind him is like, all right, cool, I already saw everything that he's going at me.
All right, so when we come back, we got to get into a few things. We got to talk about some of the pitching we've seen through the first few games. We also got to talk about Chaz McCormick. We got into a little bit there, but I've got more thoughts to give on that. We also got to get to a little bit of the conversation defending the world champion Houston Astros, including the question, what team is the biggest threat to their throne going into this 2023 season that's only three games deep so far? That's next. It's the Bullpen with Brian McDonald and Cole Thompson live from the Final Four Fan Fest at the George R. Brown Convention Center. It's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Get low when the whistle goes. Real fun.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Sports. ESPN 97.5.
Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from FanFest. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5, live here at the Final Four FanFest at the George R. Brown Convention Center. So much to do here at the Final Four FanFest. We were talking in the break. They've got lacrosse out here. Josh told us in the break his brother played lacrosse. You could come out here and play some lacrosse. You could play soccer. They got basketball courts. They even have a court over here to our right, Cole, that is actually the backup court for the one at Energy Stadium.
That's what it is?
If something happens to the court at Energy Stadium, the backup is right over here to our right.
Well,
that's the backup.
Well, I mean, it's close by.
All that
610 traffic, you know, we're going to get there just in about time.
You might take 5 hours to get there in Houston. So there's a lot going on here, including some really great appearances if we're able to make it out here to the Fan Fest, including guys like Wally Szczerbiak, a March Madness legend from back in the day, Bobby Huggins, Bill Walton, Julius Erving, and Akeem Olajuwon, Clyde Drexler, a couple of Rockets and Houston Cougars legends. So a lot here to do here at the Final Four Fan Fest at the George R. Brown Convention Center.
Make sure you stop on by at the George R. Brown Convention Center. And if you do, make sure you stop by and get some Powerade. Get up to 50% more at Powerade's 50% more court, an immersive basketball court that challenges your skills on three unique different styles of courts. You take more shots, incur more skills, and have a chance for an epic dunk. Powerade 50% more electrolytes, 100% Final Four.
All right, let's get back into some of the Astros conversation we weren't able to fit into the first two segments. We talked about a lot of the positives, obviously, with Yordan Alvarez and Kyle Tucker, what we've seen from Jose Abreu and Jeremy Pena. And now let's get into a few of the things that, at least for me, I'll speak for myself, had me scratching my head a little bit, just kind of wondering how this goes.
There's a negative? Come
there's,
on.
There's a few, okay, maybe not negative, but like just like let's put a little pin in it. Let's come back in a month. Let's see how that looks.
B-Mac, you're not one of those guys that if you don't win 27-0 every game, it's
No. I'm not saying that.
So you're not an Alabama alum who ends up seeing them win by 10 points. Nick should have ran it up by 30.
I am a Longhorn fan that has just had years of frustration beaten into me where I just kind of give up before it even happens.
You'll be back.
I'll be back.
I don't know when, but you'll be back.
Hey, Arch Manning, baby, it's here.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Okay.
I don't know if he's starting this year. Probably not, but we'll see how it goes. It'll probably be Quinn to start the year.
Yeah.
So some of the negatives here with the Astros, I mean, I hate to call it negatives, but just some of the things to kind of keep an eye on and see how it plays out over the first month of the season. Let's start with what we kind of ended last segment talking about, or just teasing at least, with Chaz McCormick. So he doesn't play in the first two games, plays yesterday and has, I think he had one hit, two walks, and a steal, or something like that. So He looked great in his one time in the lineup so far this season. It begs the question, so why Jake Meyers in games 1 and 2? What have you thought of the moves so far by Dusty?
I mean, if you're going to go defensively, okay, I would make sense. Trying to go speed, that would make sense.
I guess,
but it's
he
like,
made the catch in game 5, like the best catch in
Astros
history.
That's what I'm saying. But it's like, okay, but you just have one of the greatest catches to where his basic logo is in the back of the core at Citizens Bank Park.
It's like indoctrinated into the
sand. So it's like, okay, what's the argument then? Because if who's better hitter at the plate?
Chaz
McCormick.
Chaz.
Who has more power? Chaz McCormick. Who's better on the base path? Probably Jake Meyers, but it's not that Chaz McCormick is a slouch.
It's negligible, I think.
Yeah, at that point. Who's better defensively? It's negligible at that point. So what did you do, Chaz, in the spring to where you had to make him, or you had to make Dusty mad? Was this all based off of you making a bet in the World Baseball Classic that nobody's seen a like? Hey, I think Chinese Taipei is going to move on to the next round. Yeah, I think you're wrong. Well, I think you're stupid, Dusty. All right, sit down.
That would be there's been reports going back to last season that for I wish I could give credit to who had the report because I don't want to take credit for it. But there was a report last year that maybe Chaz wasn't Dusty's favorite guy, and it seems to have played out because, like you said, it people see, you know, the face of Jesus in their toes sometimes,
right,
with the burn patterns. Chaz's body is laid out perfectly in that center field in Philadelphia, much like the Jesus toe. So, I mean, he's obviously hit well. He hit well in this first game. And we went through, like, line by line. You know, who does this better, who does that better? It's Chaz every step of the way. I just don't see – I mean, the talking point was, oh, well, Chaz doesn't hit right-handers well. He's a guy that likes to go the opposite way. He's someone that hits lefties better than he does righties. Maybe he doesn't catch up to the Dylan Cease fastball, which is one of the better upper zone fastballs in the league. Okay, I'll hear that argument, but it's not like Jake Meyers crushed it against righties. Jake Meyers hasn't crushed it against anybody.
No.
So it's just, I get that Chaz is not a perfect center fielder. Despite MLB, I think it was Fox Sports that named him the 10th best center fielder in the league before the season started.
Yeah.
Despite all that, it's a thin position. I get that he has flaws. Maybe you want to platoon him because he hits lefties better than he does righties. Fine, in a vacuum. But is Jake Meyers really the guy to take bats away from Chaz McCormick?
That's the thing, is that if they're both hitting at the same level, so say they're both hitting at 222 or something like that, okay, well, depending on the day of when you're going up against teams that maybe are better known for power, you sit him and you allow Jake Meyers to play in the outfield. He's just as good defensively. Maybe he's a little bit quicker on the base path. He can be your guy in the nine-hole spot to where if he does get on, Jeremy Pena has an easy pathway to go ahead and drive him in. Definitely a hit-and-pitch type, I mean, hit-and-run type formation at the disposal. But when you're playing a team, really for me more so, just setting the tone at the beginning of the season, because everyone is talking about these other institutions, all these other franchises, these clubs in the AL that have made moves this offseason. Oh, well, they're finally going to see the end. Oh, Astros, we've never seen a back-to-back World Series champion in the last 20-plus years.
Yeah, since the 90s
so
Yankees.
You have that. Don't you want to set the tone early? So how do you do that? Do you allow a guy that probably is going to average no more than 215 at the plate, maybe he'll get two or three home runs, have a couple of RBIs, decent at stolen bases, have a really good defensive web chart, or would you rather have the guy that maybe hits 260, gets a couple more home runs, has a lot more RBIs, better slugging percentage, better OPS, And by the way, is not a terrible defensive center fielder.
No,
last
and
I checked,
he could come through. With, you know, he could come through in the postseason. We talked about the catch in Game 5 of the World Series. But let's not forget, in Yankee Stadium, in the ALCS, he hit a home run off of Garrett Cole.
Right. So it's like there's reasons to understand why Jake Meyers is your fourth outfielder. There's no reason he's your third outfielder right now, at least at this point, to where Chaz McCormick needs to be your platoon guy.
I get that they liked what they saw in Jake Meyers a few years ago before he got hurt.
Yeah, I like what I saw in Corey Lee a few years ago.
Exactly.
Congratulations.
But it's like we talked about last segment, the segment before with Jose Abreu. Like, let's see him do it before we reward him the spot. Let's see Jake Meyers do it before we anoint him the everyday center fielder. So I'm glad Chaz is back in the lineup. But, yeah, it's been weird to see what's going on with Chaz McCormick in that lineup. So let's get into you mentioned something about maybe some of the teams that might be catching up with the Astros, might not. That leads us to one of my questions I had on the Houston Astros for this season, only three games into this part in Game 4. I think first pitch is here in about 20 minutes, 25 minutes.
19 and counting.
19 and counting, there you go. So question to you, Cole, is which team poses the biggest threat to the Astros? We'll start with the AL West. I think that's probably pretty obvious, but who is the biggest threat to the Astros, and how much of a legitimate threat do you think they are?
Well, Oakland's going to win two games against them, so it's got to be them, naturally. It depends, because of I think that you have to
The odds on the Oakland A's to win the AL West, according to BetGM, plus 2,500.
That's an easy money for me right
now. The Astros are actually minus. They're at minus 185. Second is, of course, the Seattle Mariners at plus 325. So a big gap, according to that sports book.
Hey, you know what? Just give me about $20. I'll make that money back 10 times over.
There you go.
I think if everything continues as it did last year, it's Seattle. And for good reason. Seattle last year was able to go ahead and add in two names before at the start of the year and at the deadline with Luis Castillo
yeah.
And Robbie Ray, a former Cy Young pitcher.
Right.
They've also gotten really good play from Logan Gilbert last year. Mm-hmm. And George Kirby, the rookie, had a phenomenal as
that
the number
pitching
four.
Pitching staff could be really, really
and the,
good.
And the crazy thing about it is you would see George Kirby on most teams be your number two. He's your number four. He's your guy that you're going to see during the midweek days. He's the guy that probably is going to be the lesser of the known commodities because you want to see what Logan Gilbert does. But I really appreciate that Seattle, and a franchise for years that has given out hemorrhaging-type contracts to massive lucrative players, instead go smart and adjust it by bringing in the right name. So they go get Teoscar Hernandez, a really underrated bat who one time made noise for the Houston Astros. They bring in a guy like Colton Wong who offers both defensive second play and really good consistent contact. And they make these other moves I'm blanking on the name off the top of my head, the outfielder who played for Arizona for years. AJ Pollock.
Okay, yeah.
So what you're doing is you're taking Jared Kelenic's situation out of the conversation. Kelenic was a high-profile prospect last season, absolutely swung and missed at every single thing that you had. So I think when you have him, it gives you an opportunity to where if you don't like what you're seeing from him at the plate or defensively, you now have your platoon outfielder who can play everywhere. But everything has to continue to hit. Like, that's the main thing. And you saw this past weekend against Cleveland, pitching struggled at times, the bullpen struggled at times, and when Cleveland gets on a roll, Cleveland's able to go ahead and knock in runs like it's no one's business.
Yeah, let's get into some of the other teams when we get back on some of the biggest challenges or the biggest threats the Astros thrown coming into the season. I have a few more questions on the Astros for Cole as well. This is the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5, live from the Final Four Fan Fest at George R. Brown Convention Center. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Bullpen, live from FanFest. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
I'll go to you. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. It's The Bullpen with the producers here at ESPN Radio. One producer and one Sports Map radio host of Just Saying 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. every Monday through Friday on Sports Map Radio. Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter is here with me as well out here at the Final Four Fan Fest. Cole, tell me one of the cool things that the fans could do out here at the Final Four Fan Fest.
Make sure while you're stopping out here at the George R. Brown Convention Center, you fly high by going to the NASA Experience. Giant leaps start right here at NASA's Johnson Space Center booth, where you can see how high you would jump on the moon, what pair of space boots fit you best, and how we are going back to the moon and beyond in the future. Make sure while you're stopping by here at the George R. Brown Convention Center, shoot well, shoot high, and aim high by stopping by the NASA Greater Experience.
So what do you think your vertical is on the moon? Are you topping 40 inches?
I'm talking 85 inches, man.
Okay. Listen, so we're getting big time here.
Listen, if Bryce Young can go ahead and play in the NFL, I could top 85 inches. I think that that's a fair consensus.
All right, hold on. I'm going to have to fact check this. Josh, in the back of the 97.5 studios, you think my man Cole here hits 85 inches if he's jumping on the moon?
Come on, Josh.
He sounded quite confident, I must say, B-Mac.
All right, B-Mac,
remember when I was filling in with Killer Bees?
I said
that I was going to go ahead and win this round, and Joel lost his mind thinking that.
You did.
How mad I get?
You did. Yeah, I think you got, what, 4 out of 5?
4 out of 5.
When we did
and you were
said it.
And you were working the show with Creighton
and I even,
on the one that I got wrong.
And I even threw you off on one of them. It was actually something that I had commented on with Patrick Creighton, and I completely forgot about it like a day later.
Confidence is key in this industry, so you might as well be confident by going
ahead
and
get the vertical. You sold Josh on your vertical, so I'll go ahead and co-sign the 85-inch vertical jump
Dang
there on
straight.
The moon. All right, so let's finish off this Astros conversation here before we get into some final four topics next hour, also some Houston Texans, some WrestleMania. Night 2 is tonight at 7 o'clock on Peacock. I know Josh can't wait for that. He's a big wrestling fan, always has lots to chime in on when I try to bring up wrestling on the show. But let's finish off this conversation on who would be the biggest threat to the Houston Astros this season. We talked about in the division with the Seattle Mariners, and I agree with you there. I don't buy – obviously the Oakland A's are terrible. I don't buy
– nah.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, hey, listen, I think they got too good this year, this offseason. They added too many good moves to where they're not going to have 125 losses.
Yeah, maybe so.
They're not going to.
Yeah, but – I don't buy into the Rangers. I mean, Jacob DeGrom I just saw the news that Jacob DeGrom left after like 4 innings. Like, oh my God, is he hurt already?
Already.
Turns out he just gave up a bunch of runs and they took him out of the game.
Well, but, you know, either way, good for you.
I don't buy into the Rangers. It's just, it doesn't matter what the names are on the back of the jerseys. They're still the Rangers. It doesn't matter. The Angels are always kind of that team, like, you see what they're doing, but it never comes together. Obviously, you have arguably the two best players in baseball with Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani on their team. I thought they added some nice pieces with Hunter Renfro in the outfield, with Tyler Anderson, the starting pitcher from the Dodgers. I mean, I'll ask you, Cole, do you think it – Mike Trout has played one playoff series in his entire career that got swept by the Kansas City Royals, I think back in 2014.
14.
Yeah, he played one – arguably the best player of this generation has had one playoff series he's gotten swept. Do you think it ever comes together for this group of Angels with Mike Trout at the helm?
It has to this year because if you have Shohei Ohtani going into free agency.
Yeah, he's gone. And if it doesn't, he's gone.
He's gone. And he may just go walk right across the town to the other stadium called Dodger Stadium and get this lucrative contract where they'll pay him. And he'll be the formidable force in the face of the franchise of an organization that knows how to win, knows how to replace talent, and has a decent farm system to where they bring up players and they immediately become factors and contributors to where they make those moves. I feel like that this is a team that will be flirting with postseason contention in September, which honestly is something that I think is a massive win for Los Angeles because we usually kick them out after the All-Star break
because they don't do
enough. And even if you think that, oh, they added in this player, oh, will they try to bring in this player, the guy is on the trade block for a reason usually. It's not one of these high-profile names that's going into a contract year and they want to get more draft capital for them or they want to get more prospects to add into the farm system. They just added, like, the random sixth-inning reliever from an actual contender because that team added in a legitimate superstar that comes in. So I agree with you. I like the moves. I think Jared Walsh is going to be a fine first baseman. I like Taylor Ward. He did a phenomenal job.
He had a great hot start last year, kind of tailed off towards the end, but he showed some tools.
Anthony Rendon, he swings and misses at the plate. He swings and misses at fans. Either way, you know, it's
going to be
fine.
We'll get into that later.
It's going to be fine. I know you're paying him a lot of money to be just a strikeout machine and be an embarrassment, but that's not the point. I like this lineup. It's the best Angels lineup they've had since 2014. Is it enough to get over Seattle? Is it enough to get over these other teams, such as the Chicago White Sox, that's going to be fighting for a wild card spot, over a Tampa Bay Rays, which has the lowest payroll in baseball, yet gets 90-plus wins every single year. It makes it look easy. Can they do it against a Baltimore Orioles team that did nothing this offseason, but people are still high because of the young, prosperous talent, Adley Rutschman, Gunnar Henderson? They're going to add up more pitchers at some point. Can they go ahead and compete in that level? Because the division's there.
I think that's the group you're talking about because I think we're in agreement. They're not going to win more games than the Astros. I'd be very surprised if they win more games than the Mariners. So you're talking about can they win more games than the Blue Jays, who might come in second in the AL East? Can they win more games than the Tampa Bay Rays you mentioned. That'll be kind of the – can they get to, you know, at least 85 wins, maybe even 90, and does that get them into one of the last wild card spots? But let's move outside of the AL West and talk about some of the other teams in the rest of the league. The rest of the American League, obviously the Yankees are probably the favorite to win the American League East. You've got the page up here for the Cleveland Guardians as the winners of the AL Central last year. Who outside of the AL West do you see as the biggest threat to the Astros going to the playoffs?
You had to ruin my surprise, didn't
you?
Oh,
I'm sorry about that.
You had to ruin my surprise.
Yeah.
Here's the deal, ladies.
A little peek behind the curtain here.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's the deal. I'm just saying it. You can listen to on ESPN 97.5, 92.5, 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. every single day, Monday through Friday.
Yep.
I go ahead and have a segment where I make one bold take. I stick with it throughout the rest of the year. And at the end of the day, if I got to eat crow, someone go ahead, rotisserie style it, send it to the studio. I'll eat it live on air. The Cleveland Guardians.
Hold on. Listening audience, please don't cook up crow. I feel bad for our poor receptionist who has to open up a FedEx package and it's a cooked crow inside the FedEx package.
You just say crow and make it a rotisserie style chicken. How about that?
All right, there we go. All right.
The Cleveland Guardians are going to be a team that makes a lot of noise this year. I love the addition of what they added power-wise. Mike Zunino behind the plate, and then you add in Josh Bell. He's a high strikeout guy, but he will launch that ball 440 feet on the regular. They have Oscar Gonzalez, who last year came on strong, big postseason winner, got that walk-off against the Yankees in Game 4. Love what he brings. Defensively, they are one of the best teams. From Andrés Giménez, Jose Ramírez, Stephen Kwan, Miles Straw. We saw him make a bunch of highlight plays out in
center. Former Astro.
So you know that. He's going to come in. And their starting rotation is the most underrated in baseball, with Shane Bieber, Tristan McKenzie, Cal Quantrill, Aaron Civile, and then you have Emmanuel Clase as the closer. Move over Edwin Diaz. Timmy Trump is going to have a new favorite. It's going to be Emmanuel Clase by the end of the year.
Yeah, he's got electric stuff. He's one that feels like there's no limit to the supply of relief pitchers that can hit 100 miles an hour, and Clase is certainly in that business. It's a great lineup. Obviously, Jose Ramirez, like if you're playing fantasy baseball, to me, I know you've already had your draft, but to me, he's the number one pick in all of fantasy
base. How is he not?
Not only because, I mean, obviously people want to maybe, Aaron Judge. Well, first off, he's not going to hit 62 home runs again. But Jose Ramirez added, you know, obviously the stolen bases to the equation that Aaron Judge doesn't. But that lineup, you know, like you mentioned, besides Jose Ramirez, I really like Amed Rosario and Giménez. I've had a couple of those guys on my fantasy lineups from time to time. And then obviously Shane Bieber in the rotation. It's an interesting squad. I just don't. Do you really take them as a legit? I know you. I think we both agree they'll make the playoffs. But if they're in a playoff series against the Astros, do you take them as a legit threat to push them in a 7-game series?
Will they finally be willing to be aggressors at the deadline? That's the main thing. Because if I feel like that right now, if you're missing, say, a middle reliever, say you're missing a shortstop with the bat, say you're missing somebody who can come in and add in that extra power, if you think that Josh Naylor's not doing enough at first base to where Bell's taking away more reps, you have to have someone else come in, like an Oscar Gonzalez, to play DH, because if you don't have that role, how do you feel about making that move? If you get aggressive, if you find a way to get aggressive at the deadline, yeah, I do. I feel like this team, top to bottom, I actually think Tristan McKenzie is a dark horse to win AL Cy Young.
When he's healthy. He's supposed to come back in May, right?
And the guy knows how to beat the living daylights out of the Astros.
Yeah, so he had an eight-inning shutout against the Astros.
Yeah, and he has
like
a .73 whip. The dude knows how to not only have power, but he has great control and great framing at the plate. To where, yeah, I think that they could be about a 95-win team. And with the right matchups, meet Houston in the ALCS. Last thing you want to do is go into Game 7 face-off against Tristan McKenzie.
No,
and
he's a great pitcher.
A fully healthy bullpen.
Yeah, it'd be a very interesting matchup if the Houston Astros get there. We talked about the Mariners in that pitching rotation, but if you got Bieber and a healthy Tristan McKenzie at the top in that closer, that hammer in the back end with Emmanuel Clase, that's a potent trio to have to deal with. All right, we got to move on here from the Astros, get into the Final Four next. Our reaction to the UConn-San Diego State title matchup tomorrow night at Energy Stadium, the last call for the legendary broadcaster Jim Nantz. All that is next on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5, live from the Final Four Fan Fest. It's Brian McDonald, Cole Thompson. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
ESPN 97.5.